Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn.
Hi, this is Howes New York with New York real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight we're recapping the top real estate stories in Brooklyn for the month of September. Stay tuned for Bob.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. You've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home. The good old Brooklyn.
Welcome, everyone, to How's New York? I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. And tonight we talk about what happened in Brooklyn real estate over the month of September. Jason has been scouring the internet, newspapers, legal blogs, real estate blogs, to find us the latest stories of what's going on in Kings County. Jason, what do you have for us?
Well, it is, once again, we've got another interesting month of stories. This time I think we've got a nice diverse crop of new stories, and then we're getting a little bit away from all the stories that dealt with the booming prices, because we're over the summer and it seems like that's when all those stories tend to crop up. Now we've got a lot of interesting stories, and the first one comes to us from the New York Times, and it's talking about the transformation going on in Dumbo, and the prices that are just, again, you know, if you haven't been tuning in or haven't been paying attention, the prices being realized in all of Brooklyn seem to be hitting new records every month or every 6 months, and especially in downtown Brooklyn and in this area, which is being heavily developed. We're seeing the median prices of $1.5 million for property down in that area, and we've already touched on the tech companies that are moving into this area, and they're developing they're pretty much fabricating a park area because we know that there isn't any lush green park area in that vicinity. But they are building it up and transforming that area to create park space and places where people congregate and intending it to be a must-see destination and attract tourists from not only around the world but around the boroughs, and get people to come to visit this area. And they're looking to institute and implement a Chelsea Market style shopping center, which is if you've ever been to Chelsea Market down in downtown Manhattan, it is a booming foodie heaven. And this, it seems to be like the perfect destination for a place such as that, with all the artisanal restaurants and the Grimaldi's and now the Giuliana's and all those little places tucked in the nooks and crannies around the Water Street and Front Street and all those great places down there. This just seems to be one of the projects that might be the most exciting in the city.
And you know, it almost looks like, you know, the Chelsea Market, you could almost envision a space there just like Chelsea Market, with that sort of labyrinth of rooms and hallways and things of that nature. And you know, that would fit in nicely, but the unusual thing about Dumbo is that it is a hard place to get in and it is a hard place to get out of. Beautiful location. For those of you who don't know where Dumbo is, it stands for Down Underneath the Manhattan Bridge. and beautiful skyline of Manhattan right across the East River. Nice waterfront. A lot of old buildings, a lot of old warehouse buildings that probably served the waterfront in the heyday of the East River. And, you know, it's just a beautiful spot, but it's inaccessible. And there's no subway that's going in there. And there's probably only one bus that can squeeze in there. And it is a hard place to get to, but once you get in it, it is a quaint little, you feel maybe like you've traveled back in time a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the next stories that we're going to talk about might be a definite help to the area in terms of getting to it. We'll get to that in a few moments, but you're absolutely right about the Chelsea Market. You almost imagine that Chelsea Market should have started in Dumbo before the city. It almost seems like a better fit for Dumbo than where it is in Manhattan. But absolutely, all the things to do, and it is really a mashup of traditional old style old world Brooklyn meeting up with this new urban hipster environment. And from the glass enclosed carousel, which is a big draw now, and all the fairs and festivals that they are constantly hosting in that area, to the green markets and all that, which have all their fair. It just seems like they're trying to attract an inordinate amount of people, almost as if you've got a great restaurant with a maximum occupancy, and they're trying to exceed that in the worst way. And I can't blame them for wanting to attract people to the area, because it is a great place to see and visit. You're right, it is quite a nightmare to reach it, and that does provide a nice segue into the next story that we found from the Daily News, which is extremely interesting. A proposed gondola, cable car, that a developer wants to put in to connect Williamsburg to Manhattan, which could offer a 4-minute commute in quite swanky style, it looks like.
You know, I'm looking at this, and the developer says this is relatively inexpensive and quickly deployable. That's what he thinks. Well, New York City.
I wonder what city he put this in before he came to New York.
Yes, once the labor unions get involved and the Department of Buildings, and this is going to quadruple. that's probably a low estimate of what's going to happen to this. But it does make for an interesting conversation piece. I mean, they do have the Roosevelt Island train, which occasionally gets stuck. I wouldn't like to be up there and have firemen crawling up the cable to extract me from that little glass bubble. But it does seem like a very cute idea. Of course, Williamsburg, that's why, you know, the proximity to the city. That's why it got hot so fast, that the L train was a big draw for them. I wonder what's going to happen to the L train. They'll probably be mothball it now after this gondola comes in.
That might be your no frills way into the city. Definitely, when I saw the price for this, the proposed price, I almost got reverse sticker shock, because I couldn't believe how cheap it was. $75 million is what he's estimating it would cost to install this rather ambitious system. And you're right. I guess that number probably the unions will never be able to make any money off of that estimate. But I do love the artist rendering. If you go onto our show page, and or if you find a story on dailynews.com, the artist rendering for this is quite quite imaginary. I've never seen this area look so lush and vibrant. The water seems crystal clear. The greenery is the greenest I've ever seen, and it is quite a utopia that these little cable cars will be traveling between. But you almost think that this something like this, it seems to be a no-brainer, and maybe it is closer to happening than not. And you know, once they settle on a higher price for that they can tax us some more, it seems like this could be in the offing in the next decade or so, within maybe even sooner.
Yeah, it'd be a great yet another attraction. Walk over the Brooklyn Bridge and ride back over on the gondola back to Williamsburg, or vice versa.
Yeah. And the what it's called, the proposed name for it is the East River Skyway. So, coming soon to the newly developed Dumbo area. Now we're moving on to another story that kind of takes the opposite approach to a lot of the topics we've touched on in the past several recap shows, which had just this never-ending boom for prices in Brooklyn, and you know everything was on the rise, and then that graph was forever pointed up in terms of prices. And now we get from biznow.com a little bit of a sobering headline, or at least to temper some expectations, so we don't kind of backtrack into the problem that we faced in around 2008, 2009, about Brownstone Brooklyn possibly headed for the bubble bursting. What did you think? I thought this was a little bit interesting in the fact that you really can't start sustaining these astronomical prices and thinking that you're going to flip them in such a short turnaround time, like, you know, 5-7 years ago.
Well, you know, Jason, as lovely as the brownstones are on the outside, and if they've been preserved on the inside, they have wonderful woodwork, wonderful oak and mahogany and all sorts of expensive wood inside. But when you come down to it, it's still really a railroad room type layout where you walk in the front door and all the rooms are laid out, you know, back to back to back, all the way to the rear of the house. And to keep that charm, you know, you have to keep the rooms and the woodwork and the layout basically the way it was. But, you know, welcome to the 21st century, where you went between TVs and man caves and a pool table and all sorts of, you know, a modern commercial kitchen. You know, maybe the allure is dying down. I know I had clients who couldn't sell their lovely Victorian home that was lovingly preserved. Why? Small rooms, and, you know, families came with young kids, and where are the closets? Where are we going to put the big TV? Where it's going to be a family room, but I want to rip out that 30-inch stove and put in a huge commercial stove. And Brownstone Brooklyn doesn't lend itself to really modifying, you know, your space so much. You know, you're fully attached. You have two or three windows in the front, two or three windows in the back, and that's the end of the story. There's not much. Everything else is laid out in a line. So, you know, I can say around the Barclays Center, prices went crazy. Of course, when they proposed Barclay, everybody was up in arms, just kicking us out, just pushing us out. Well, I dare say a lot of those people got pushed out with a lot of money in their pocket, and the ones that stayed behind are still, their properties are still appreciating.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very hot area that came back from the dreariness to, you know, a very, very hot neighborhood, all thanks to, you know, the Barclay Center.
It is a real fascinating dichotomy, and when you look at the area, when you visit it and you see these real beautiful stone carved brownstone buildings, and you know, you look in any of the windows that might be partially open to see these huge rooms inside, and it really is a charming environment, and you see these tree-lined streets, and you see all this. You really have a real old neighborhood feel, and then you start to realize how small it is and how tiny the space is to traverse in the neighborhood, in the area. And if you try to park a car, some of those blocks, it's amazing how narrow, and you don't really fully appreciate it until you try and drive an SUV into that area. And then you imagine what the inside of the space might be like, and you wonder, who is the target for these types of properties that are running into the $2 million and higher range? Is it a real feasible property to raise a family at? Where you might have two, three, or four kids. It almost seems like it's a property for a couple that maybe doesn't have kids, or one child, or maybe I don't know who the right person is for these properties, especially when you consider what some of them are trying to then get for these properties a year later. It's a mystery.
People, you know, the headline is it heading for a bubble? Mm. And I think probably people are realizing that it's still a railroad style property, regardless of how beautiful the brownstone is on the outside or the interior woodwork. It's probably not family friendly, a large family friendly, but you know, it's just one of those things that everyone wants to say they have or they own a brownstone. Fully detached house doesn't cut it. Brownstone cuts it.
There's still, even at the $2 million price, there may be no more desirable property in New York than one of these buildings. Yet, you know, we're seeing that we might have to be, or at least the people who are looking to invest in a home in this area might have to be a little bit cautious and take some real serious examination of whether or not, you know, if this is going to be a long-term thing or if they're going to outgrow this in a relatively short time, because these properties they're advanced properties. It doesn't seem like it's for the first-time home buyer, maybe, but you know, they are still and have been for a long time probably the most famous and desirable homes in New York.
Yeah, you're right. There's only a few of them, and they're not making any more.
And that brings us to another interesting story. This might be my favorite story that we've touched on lately. It also comes to us from biznow.com, and it's talking about the race to be the tallest building in Brooklyn. Now, I think we might have mentioned this in another story about the airspace that you were in Brooklyn anyway. This is not as big a problem in Manhattan, although I'm sure that it is, and you can't just build however high you want, wherever you want. But in Brooklyn, you're challenged by how high you can build a building. And some places I know, at least in, I believe in Bay Ridge, you cannot exceed 6 stories to what I thought was the old rule. Maybe it's changed, but at least now a couple of buildings are competing to be almost like mini skyscrapers at, you know, over 500 feet tall, and there's one that's coming that's going to eclipse them all.
Well, I happened to be walking around downtown Brooklyn the other day, and I have about a 40-year experience walking down there, having gone to law school down there and now practicing down there. And I was almost walking around like a tourist with my head straight up in the sky, amazed at the transformation of what's going on there. And yes, Jason, they are building some of the tallest and pretty good-looking buildings also over there, pretty stunning architecture. And also what they're doing is putting amenities into these buildings that you really never have to leave. Indoor garage, outdoor cooking spaces, pool, whether indoor or outdoor, some type of rooftop amenities, a gym, a movie theater, and you pull in and you really don't have to leave again until you have to go back to work the next day. But the odd thing about this area is it's a little area also feeding out of the Manhattan Bridge, and there's really, to my knowledge, no community or neighborhood there. These are just areas with developers have put up the tallest buildings you could imagine, and there's no real community or neighborhood attached to it. It's just right over the Manhattan Bridge, a taxi cab ride, and you can jump out of your cab and go into your building. But when you come down, you are really in a pretty characterless type of neighborhood. But having said that, some people, even in the neighborhood, never come out of the house. They get their own TV and man cave, and they stay in their house. So I guess this may not be too different than people who enjoy staying home once they get home.
Well, you're touching on some interesting things, and I'll kind of merge, since we're coming towards the end, I'll kind of merge our last story with this one a little bit. And this last story from Cranes talks about ways Brooklyn office developers are looking to entice residents and businesses further. And one of the things you're talking about, the amenities, and it seems that these massive structures that are now going up are not just exclusive to residential. I mean, there's going to be remarks about a building that's coming in 2016 at close to 600 feet tall that's going to have about 823 units. But we're also seeing that these structures and these buildings and these and all this this influx of building is not just relegated to residential units. It's also businesses, and some of these buildings are going to house, some pretty big tech companies and or the medium sized tech companies that are maybe looking to take a bigger piece of the pie from the bigger guys. And so there's going to be this real cohabitation of real trendy apartment complexes with some real high-tech office spaces housed in these buildings that might have been around from the 30s and have this incredible stone carving and this architecture that looks great. And it looks like they're trying to retain a lot of that, but then also expand on that and build it higher and make them even more modern, like you said, about all these new amenities that are designed to attract the urban hipster, 30-something tech employee, worker, business.
Well, even if you walk around the Metrotech area of Brooklyn, you do kind of feel like you've been transported into the future a little bit. A huge office building, very, very well done, with some landscaping and some some street amenities, tables, benches, street-level restaurants, little park. But it is very almost futuristic, and that has an appeal to some people. And I guess building either new offices or repurposing those buildings that have existed and renovating them, repurposing them, and maybe building up on them is the way that, you know, we're looking to get further office space. I don't think it's happening in Manhattan, and I think people, even though it did happen in Jersey City, you know, this back office stuff, I don't know if people want to go to a job in Jersey City. I think they want to go to a job in Brooklyn or Manhattan, you know, whether it's the back office or the main office. They just want to hear the address Brooklyn or Manhattan. So I think downtown Brooklyn probably is set once again to explode, you know, on a commercial basis and have this whole, you know, and follow the lines of this whole Metrotech. But the articles, surprisingly, also did mention something close to home, the Brooklyn Army Terminal and the buildings that you see alongside the Gowanus. Those are all being refurbished, and they're getting some retail tenants in there, and they're getting, you know, other tenants that trying to think of the term, incubator type businesses. So there'll be a lot of stuff happening. I think it's going to spread out into probably the Sunset Park area of Brooklyn and probably any area, kind of hip area in Brooklyn that has, you know, warehouse-style buildings, factory-style buildings, most of which have probably already been turned into residential, like a Williamsburg. I doubt there's much warehouse stuff out there. So probably commercial tenants now are looking for commercial space that has not been changed into residential, and that's probably where they're looking to grow into.
Yeah, and getting and tying it all together is the core theme of the show, and it's all about Brooklyn, and it really, and no matter where you're building, if you're building up to attract residential areas in downtown Brooklyn or businesses, or if it's in, you know, building up Brooklyn Bridge Park in the Dumbo area, or if it's in Brownstone Brooklyn, it seems to be that no matter what they're doing, what they're renovating or what they're building, nobody wants to lose the fact that it's Brooklyn, and no one wants it ever to appear that you're not in Brooklyn. So whatever they're doing, they are retaining that Brooklyn atmosphere so that you know very well where you, like you said, the address, but not just the address, the feel of it, the environment, the neighborhood, the area, it all rings very much that it's Brooklyn. And I think that no matter what technological advances or high-tech innovations they can do to the buildings and design and the surrounding areas, you feel like there's always going to be that tip of the cap to the old-time Brooklyn. To me, I'm just waiting for them to put in a Jetson-style moving walkway that's cobblestone, so that you could actually walk on a cobblestone moving sidewalk.
That's probably not too much of the future. What do they say? You can take the kid out of Brooklyn, but you can't take Brooklyn out of the kid.
That's
so
exactly
we are
true.
Now probably towards the end of our show, but I do want to mention, I know this didn't come across Jason's radar in researching tonight's program because he was focused on Brooklyn, but, you know, we begin our show by saying we're broadcasting from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego. And we picked Longyearbyen, Norway. Why? Because it's probably the northernmost point inhabitable in the world. And strangely, there was an article in the paper the other day. There's a little slip of land off the coast of Longyearbyen, Norway, owned by a private Norwegian millionaire or billionaire. And he wants to sell the property. It's barren, it's desolate, it's of no value to anybody. Probably wind chill factors are about 1,000 degrees below zero. That's in the summer, and probably covered by ice, you know, 365 days a year. But the strange thing about this story is it rings the Arctic, and who is a potential suitor to buying this Norwegian property but a Chinese billionaire? And, of course, that raises everybody's attention to what the Chinese billionaire, who they all claim is a front for the Chinese government, it probably is, what their intentions are on buying a piece of land on the tip of the Arctic Circle. So, Jason, that's my tonight's what happened in September in real estate in Brooklyn and Longyearbyen.
You're going to have us all wondering all weekend, why is this Chinese buyer looking to buy this land or this property? What's going there? What?
We're going to do some investigations to get back and report to you at the end of next month's show. Well, this concludes tonight's radio program. We had a lot of fun talking about what happened in Brooklyn and Longyearbyen, Norway, in the month of September. And thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and Jason, our executive producer, for digging up all of these great, you know, powerful Brooklyn stories. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people, wishing you a good night, a good morning, and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.